21 relative to the Hartford landfill. Would the clerk please read the roll?
DiBella.
Here.
Battle. Avedisian. Buell. Bush.
Here.
Curry. Drake. Gardeau.
Here.
Healy.
Here.
Hoffman.
Here.
Oh, thank you, Commissioner Hoffman. Hohead. Holloway.
Here.
Yono.
Here.
Cambly. LaChance. LeBeau.
Here.
Lester. Lewis. Magnin.
Here.
Maniscalco. Van Dyke. Murata. Payne. Tell.
Yes.
Potoski. Salemi.
Here.
Sweezy.
Here.
I see Commissioner Taylor. Torres?
Yep.
Commissioner Torres, was that you? Vecino?
Here.
Wolf?
Here.
Thank you.
Is there a quorum?
Yes, we have a quorum.
Okay. Item number four, public comments relative to agenda items. Okay. Item five, discussion regarding Hartford Landfill. This is an issue that has been ongoing between the MDC and DEEP, as you're probably well aware, since 2016 in August, when we notified the state of the violation of the agreement we had relative to the landfill. We're going to take you through a series of short, brief comments by our attorney, Chris Stone, and also our chief executive officer, just for some background. And it, the reason that we're calling this meeting is that we have been in negotiations for well over a year with the existing administration, and probably two and a half years with the Malloy administration. And we have been up and down on this issue, and I think that Chris Stone circulated something relative to the last negotiation, which was a couple weeks ago, when the state came back with their offer relative to what we were doing, and obviously the offer was not acceptable. In fact, it wasn't really a negotiation. It was an alternative that was given to us of $500,000. It's right now costing us about $2.1 million. It cost a few of the towns that much money, and there's about a $15.5 million backlog from 2016 when we discovered the issue. So I'm going to ask that briefly we begin with an agenda, our agenda with Chris Stone to discuss the legal. We're in court and some of the other issues relative to the background here, and will bring us up to date relative to where we are today. Chris?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can everyone hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay, great. First of all, thank you all for being here on this very important issue, not just to the NVC, but obviously to each of our member towns, as this is a sewer issue, and the effects of the resolution or non-resolution of this matter certainly affects the ad valorem budget as we move forward. A few weeks ago, I sent out an email to the chief executive officers of each of our 8-member towns. I just recently sent a copy of that to the town councilors in each of the towns. In very succinctly, and if I know I'm going to repeat some of the things that are in that email, but we have 4 pending claims, 2 handled by Attorney Garrett Flynn out of West Hartford, and 2 of them handled by Hinckley Allen, in particular John Droney and Jeff Merman with that firm. The cases being handled by Attorney Flynn are the state claims commissioner cases. One of them relates to the fee that was due as of December 31st, 2019. The other relates to the amounts that are claimed since January 1, 2020. The 2 state court claims or actions, one is against the state of Connecticut. They filed a in response to that claim for a declaratory relief. They claimed a sovereign immunity that their motion to dismiss was granted by the court. We appealed to the appellate court. The Supreme Court took the case from the appellate court, and so we briefed the matter in Supreme Court. We heard argument, they heard argument in January of this year. We're looking for an opinion sometime within the next 2 to 3 months. On the motion to dismiss, if the court grants rules in our favor, we go back to Superior Court for litigation on the underlying claim. Sorry for that interference. I don't know where it came from.
Someone escaped from jail or something.
The second state court claim is a claim directly against the commissioner of DEEP, Ms. Dykes, claiming her failure, acting outside the scope of her authority by not paying the district the sums that are due under the discharge fee. That case is on hold pending the results of the Supreme Court decision, again, due in the next, within the next 2 to 3 months. That's the extent of the litigation. It's, it's aggressive, certainly. It's costly. So far, we've spent upwards of $400,000 on attorney's fees and costs in total for taking those actions. The state left us with no choice, however, and we proceeded accordingly. I would point out that the and Scott's going to talk more about this, but one of the things that has been the byproduct of this these court fights is that the state has at least approached us on negotiating a settlement, and although those negotiations are somewhat at a standstill, it was what we considered to be optimistically a start. This goes back to March of 2020. COVID hit, so it delayed a lot of the activity that was to take place during, post-negotiation. And we have since heard from the state just recently, and you have that information in the emails that I sent you. But with that, I'd be more than happy to answer any questions on the litigation part of this exercise. And if there's no questions, I'll turn it back to the chairman to move on in the agenda.
Chris, just an enlightenment of the last year, because the negotiations started about a year ago. And what was that process? You had the Attorney General's office, you had the DEEP people, and you were setting it up for a negotiation that actually.
As it ended up, you're right, Mr. Chairman, it was anything but a negotiation. But at the onset, this goes back to a conversation that our CEO had with a representative from DEEP, which he'll get into detail about. But that started with a conversation at that level. We then had a subsequent follow-up conversation involved myself, Attorney Dan Salton from the AG's office, Betsy Wingfield from DEEP, and our CEO, Mr. Jellison. That was a conference call. I don't have the exact date. It was early March of 2020. It was fruitful. We were optimistic that we were going to reach some resolution. We, in fact, came to an understanding of the written terms of an agreement, subject to our board's approval, obviously, and subject to it being vetted at the state level. But we had an agreement among staff as to the terms of an agreement with two glaring omissions, which are the most important to our towns and to the MDC, and that is how much the state was willing to pay going forward and how much the state was willing to pay looking backward. So there's an arrears that's built up that would be calculated, at least in our mind, based upon whatever amount the state was willing to pay going forward. That was left out of the agreement. There was a series of negotiations on language. From March, we didn't get an actual draft of the agreement until sometime in July for a lot of reasons that are beyond anyone's control, but we received the draft, we reviewed it, we responded in real time in the summer of 2020, and then we finally came to a resolution on the terms, again, subject to our board's approval, on terms in the August-September range of 2020. The state then, our co-parts, counterparts with the state, Ms. Wingfield and Attorney Salton, went to where they had to go to try to get authority for for the financial part of this thing. And that took some time. And it took more time, quite frankly, than I had expected. But it took a lot of time. So in those players involve, obviously, the OPM secretary. It involved the governor's office. And involve DEEP, because whatever monies would be paid would come out of DEEP's budget. After all that, back and forth internally at the state level, we were not engaged in that, obviously, but at the state level, and obviously the governor's office was involved as well. They arrived at a number that they shared with us just recently, and that's what prompted increased involvement of the MDC, our board, the member towns, in terms of where we think this is going in terms of a solution. The litigation is somewhat stalled until we get the results of the Supreme Court action. The state claims commissioner actions are somewhat stalled until the Judiciary Committee acts on our application or our request for permission to sue the state. In my emails to you, you receive a copy of a letter from the delegation from our eight member towns, encouraging the Judiciary Committee to approve our request for permission to sue the state. But until they act on that, and then ultimately the General Assembly acts on that, that's in a holding pattern as well. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Scott. I know you have some blanks, a lot of blanks to fill in that timeline.
Scott, but Chris, before you do that, Scott, would you also give the background of what the board in their considerations has done to the volume rate between Pratt & Whitney and MDC as you address the issue? And
I will.
The offer that was put that in that context, please. Okay.
Yes, absolutely. So just to fill in some of the blanks, as Chris mentioned, obviously there's a lot going on between myself and Chris Stone on the legal side. So just to remind everyone, as the chairman mentioned, we really found this issue in August of 16 because, as you remember, a lot of our financial people were dealing directly with the town financial people, trying to identify all of the nonprofits within the district towns, and we know that changes on a regular basis. And we were trying to make sure in 2013, 14, and 15 that we had the right number of nonprofits and that they were, in fact, paying the right rates and that we were paying the right surcharge. In that process is when we found the state of Connecticut and realized at the landfill that they were paying for discharge at not the correct rate, that it was being paid for as a nonprofit sewer charge per CCF rather than for contaminated groundwater discharge, which the board approved in 2007. So we agreed, like we have with other entities, Triumph and West Hartford and others, once we found this error on our part in billing, we did not go backwards. We just started And we sent out the first bill in September of 2016 after I notified Betsy Wingfield of our error. So we didn't go backwards. Through all of that discussion, obviously the start of the discussion was we can't afford it. We really think that you're gouging us. And I truly do believe that DEEP did not understand, and I know they did not understand the 13 cents per gallon contaminated water discharge versus the sewer charge that they were paying. It's about 27 times higher. And so they really felt that the MDC was gouging them for a lot of different reasons. Through all of that, we were trying desperately to get them to understand that we're not trying to gouge them, that this is just a rate structure that everyone pays under the general permitting process that DEEP actually issues to others that use this rate structure. To no avail, there's been numerous meetings at DEEP's offices, in 2017, the chairman, myself, Bar Halloran, and Commissioner Slummy went to a meeting, and they offered us $300,000 at that meeting. Obviously, that didn't go over well for us, and so they've really been paying us about $25,000 a year. And they were feeling that, $300,000 is a fair number. So we finally, as Chris mentioned, through a lot of pressure, honestly, by the town's letters, as you remember the letter that I sent out in February of, I believe, 20 to all of the towns, and the town support and the commission's support, the chairman's support, there was a new life in the discussion with DEEP, and I finally got a phone call from Betsy Wingfield on March 25th of 2020, and what we had discussed in that conversation was she would be willing to meet with us as long as we were not expecting to pay them $2 million a year. And my point to her was, at the same token, you offered us $300,000 in our last meeting. As long as you're not looking to offer us $300,000 to $500,000, we'll be willing to meet with you, your AG, and our district council, Chris Stone. So in that conversation, we agreed to meet. And the terms of that verbal discussion was we were not going to be talking about anything other than the terms of some form of an agreement, and I agreed to that. So we had our first meeting, as Chris Stone mentioned, and we had those conversations about developing, forget about the number, let's agree on the terms of some agreement. That would move forward. And they've always said, we're different, we can't afford it, we're different, we didn't own the landfill, it was the cities, it was CRAs, it's not our fault, we shouldn't have to pay for this. Our position has always been the MDC, eight of our towns used this facility, but there were 72 towns that contributed to this landfill in Hartford, and our eight member towns should not be responsible for the ongoing cost of accepting this discharge forever. It should be shared amongst the towns that used the facility. So to Chairman's point, in all of those discussions, we finally in 2019, to be fair, and felt like it was a goodwill, we actually changed the rate structure because we also had another issue with Pratt & Whitney. And again, Pratt & Whitney, we found out through this same process that the DEEP issued a permit to Pratt & Whitney in East Hartford, which is a separated sewer system, meaning the stormwater system in East Hartford is run by East Hartford. And therefore, EPA is the regulatory authority to oversee stormwater in East Hartford, not DEEP. However, DEEP issued a permit for Pratt & Whitney to discharge groundwater, stormwater to our sewer system without our authority. So we found this out and went through the same process, had meetings over there in Pratt & Whitney, and they would have, under the original budget numbers from 2018, they would have owed the MDC about $8 million. They took some time and said, we might decide to, they have their own industrial wastewater treatment facility, and they were thinking about rebuilding their infrastructure where they could direct that flow to their treatment plant themselves and avoid that $8 million. However, there would have been a significant increase in capital investment in their facility to do that. As part of that discussion with Chris Stone Legal, the chairman, the board, we chose to change the rate structure, which basically cut the $8 million for Pratt & Whitney down to 3.6, and it took the landfills number from $4 million down to 2.1. So basically, for larger users, they got a break, and it cut their bill in half. We instituted those rates in 2019, and as the chairman mentioned, the roughly $15 million, that correlates to some of its $4 million a year up to 2019, and the rest of it's the $2 million a year. So Pratt & Whitney chose, based on those rates, to just continue to discharge this to the MDC, and the MDC received $3.6 million and continues to receive $3.6 million from Pratt & Whitney, which, as we know, is $400,000 is 1%. So if you look at $3.5 million divided by four, you've got almost 6-7% that Avalon would have to increase if we didn't see that revenue from Pratt & Whitney. So that's a good thing for the towns to have that the revenue stream from Pratt & Whitney. In all of our discussions, we, as Chris mentioned, it took us a long time to get to a point where we could agree on the terms. And one of our biggest concerns with the terms, aside from money, was the recent issue that happened in June of 19 with the PFAS overflow from the airport. And then subsequent, July 31st of that same year, Deep South was quoted in the Hartford Current saying the number one source of PFAS is landfills. And the next day, we wrote them a letter and said, thank you very much. Do you have any test results for that? I'll get into that in a little bit. But the point of that is we really have been arguing since then about trying to resolve this issue in the terms. We definitely wanted PFAS to be addressed in this agreement. They finally agreed with us. And the position we had was, if regulations ever come to fruition, which there is none yet, but if there were, we want to make sure that whatever we agree to in terms of compensation excludes PFAS. So therefore, if DEEP wanted to increase the regulations to say you have to do XYZ that cost the MDC and other wastewater treatment facilities millions of dollars to remove PFAS, we want to be compensated for that. We've always asked DEEP to just treat the PFAS in your discharge at the landfill, and that way we don't have to deal with it in our sewer system. We finally, after all of this, we finally were able to meet with DEEP and their AG, Kristen, myself, and it was Friday the 19th, and unfortunately, they came to us through video phone call and basically said very politely that the only thing they can offer us is $500,000. They were not in any position to discuss the monies that were owed from prior years, that they would, once we had some agreement on this $500,000, that they would probably use the $500,000 per year as a measuring stick for the previous years. The one thing I can say in our discussions with the AG's office and Dee, and I do believe this, is I do believe in 2016 when we told them about this, they felt we were gouging them. I do believe now that they understand that we were just charging them the wrong rate. So I do think our relationship has gotten better. I think there's more trust there. I think the AG and Betsy Wingfield both understand that we're not trying to gouge them. It just was a rate structure. They don't agree with the rate structure. They don't agree that we should be charging them because they're different in the landfill. The landfill's a long-term issue and not a short-term issue. But there is a better relationship there, I can honestly say, since we started this. But again, unfortunately, the offer was $500,000, and I mentioned to them at that meeting that, you know, we had started this in last March, and the agreement was that don't offer me $500,000, and I won't ask for $2 million, but we wasted an awful lot of time and energy only to get an offer of $500,000. So I don't feel that was good faith. I don't believe we would have proceeded in the direction we did if we knew the end result was going to be $500,000. So that is kind of where we are with the offer. A side note, which is more of a very important environmental concern. We've always been concerned, and we've talked to the board and to the towns about this very issue about the landfill and how it operates and how it discharges this contaminated water to our sewer system. And as simplified as I can make it, the groundwater within the landfill rises to a certain point, and then they pump that water into our sewer system, and that averages about anywhere from 50,000 to 90,000 gallons a day. Last June, it was only 10,000 gallons a day because it was a dry season. But that's the way that the system within the landfill operates. And my position has been, and I believe this true, and we've proven this true, that at any point, groundwater can not only leach from the river through the dike, it can also go the other way. So if there's contaminated groundwater in the landfill to Deep's point, they want to make sure that contaminated groundwater doesn't leach into the river. So there's an environmental issue that exists no matter what we do, whether we get paid or not get paid. And this is not our problem. This is Deep's problem. But in 2018, when we were, you know, trying to get access to the landfill to take samples, we did, in fact, realize that their discharge to us, our pipes were being corrosion was occurring because of the product and the chemical compounds within the groundwater was creating a situation where our manholes serving them and the pipes serving them was corroded. And we had to clean that in 2018 so that we didn't want the water to back up in the landfill and in turn leach into the river through the dike system because the MDC had not cleaned the pipe. Obviously, we're not getting paid, so but we did clean the pipe. We recently went out to the landfill to check that pipe, and we found and I sent an email to our commissioners on March 8th. We found that we have that condition is just reoccurring, and to no surprise. And at this point, that pipe that serves the landfill is about only has about 40% capacity. So the major concern, aside from not getting paid, is I'm very concerned that the fact that we haven't cleaned this pipe yet because we're not getting paid because of what's being discharged into the landfill is corrosive in nature, that we don't want to be blamed. The MDC does not want to be blamed for causing an environmental catastrophe, whether it's in the river or whether it's at the manhole at street level along the side of the highway. So immediately we scheduled a meeting with EPA, and I had a meeting with EPA. The chairman was there, the EPA Thursday, we met Thursday, whichever that date was, it was March 4th, I think, March 4th, that very concern was raised. They're not going to get involved in how much depots us, whether or not they agree with us. They don't really care about the money piece. But we were looking for some guidance from EPA to say, you know, help us. You know, we don't want this environmental catastrophe to happen, but we're not getting paid, and we're having to replace this pipe that serves the landfill. It's about $265,000, and this will just continue and go on and on forever. And so we've got a customer that's not paying us. Is there any way that EPA can enter into this equation with the regulator? You know, we've got the state of Connecticut has been given the authority from EPA to manage their regulations, and that's called a delegated state. So the state of Connecticut is the authority within Hartford that manages all regulations by EPA, and that's why the consent order is with DEEP, and the consent decrees in the other seven towns is with EPA. We had a very good discussion with, I don't want to use his name, but we have a new person working with us at EPA. And this meeting was the first meeting that they really ever offered up guidance to really, in a sense, support us as the wastewater treatment facility. And they basically gave us some information about the possibility that there is there's a couple of federal regulations that may apply and allow us to bring EPA in on the state of Connecticut DEEP. The first one is really a regulation that talks about interference, and it's basically exactly what it sounds like. If you are a customer of the Wastewater Treatment Authority, we call it a POTW, Publicly Owned Treatment Works. That's what the regulators refer to us as. If you are in some way causing a problem within our system, then you could be considered to be interfering with our ability to do our job. The other issue, it goes back to we talked a lot about this about in 2018. We're talking about the before we even knew about PFAS. We're talking about the ammonia. We're talking about all the other constituents that are in the water. And there's another regulation that basically says that all landfills, and this is very new to us, that all landfills have a minimum federal standard that they have to comply with for discharge. The individual had explained this to us, and so we immediately went out, started this week, to start to measure and take samples to see if, as you know, DEEP is the regulator and the violator here. They issued themselves and CRA a permit, and the permit says that these components of the groundwater, use ammonia as an example, is unlimited. So there's no limit. So what we're going to try to measure is whether or not what we're actually receiving in the groundwater exceeds the minimum requirements of the federal regulations. And if that is true, we will be bringing EPA in on this issue, treating DEEP like the violator, not the regulator. So there's a couple of things we're working on here. It's very, very positive news. It doesn't mean anything about getting paid, but it does mean in our discussions on numerous occasions, and as we've mentioned before, DEEP did in October of 2018, they did put in a little pilot system, which actually did remove the contaminants from the water well below the drinking water standards, and they only did that for 3 days, and we didn't find out until 8 months later after the incident in the airport that they actually had PFAS results as part of that October test. So DEEP has has put in a pilot on-site treatment facility that did actually do its job, and they removed it and basically said they have a report, basically said that it's too cumbersome, it's too expensive, and they'd rather, I'm using the analogy with our chairman, it's like not paying your rent, and your landlord says you need to go find another place to live, and then you go look for another place to live and say, but they're asking $1,000 a month for rent. It's cheaper for me to stay where I am because I'm not paying anything. So that's really the mentality that we've got here with Deep, is that they don't feel like they should go anywhere because they're already discharging for free. And why would they truck it off site? Why would they spend any money to treat on site when they can just do nothing? And so that's kind of where we are, Mr. Chairman. If I missed anything, there's a lot more detail. I'd be more than happy to answer any questions.
And again, before we move on, are there any questions from members of the towns relative to what Scott has articulated or Chris Stone? Any questions?
Wow. Commissioner, Chairman DiBella, this is Ray Sweezy. I have one.
Okay, go ahead. Hold on, Ray.
To Chris.
None of the members of the towns have any questions of what so far. Go ahead, Ray.
Okay, Ray? To Chris Stone, please. Chris, you said the towns, or we have, the MDC has spent $400,000 approximately so far on legal. Do you have any estimates, if you have to continue this for the next year or two, what it may cost the MDC in legal, outside legal costs, so that the towns realize we have a $500,000 offer, which I'm not in favor of taking, but that is there. We've spent $400,000. We may have to spend $265,000 more to replace the pipe. We may be reimbursed. We may not. But how much more could it cost us possibly in legal fees?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Chris Stone. Yes, Chris Stone. It's difficult to predict, Commissioner, as you can well imagine. We have spent $400,000 solely at this point for the right to sue the state of Connecticut, whether it be at the claims commissioner level, two actions, or whether it's at the superior court level, two actions. It's not an insignificant amount of money, clearly, but that's just to get the right to sue. So let's assume that we're afforded the right to sue the state of Connecticut for the underlying debt. Well, that's another collection action, and that's going to be at least another $200,000 to $300,000 on that part of the case. That's where we're actually getting to the merits. But rather than join us, quite frankly, I've asked the state to join us in our application for the Judiciary Committee to give them give us the authority to sue, because they think they're right, and we obviously think we're right. So rather than argue about who can sue which party going forward, let's just agree that let the legislature give us authority, and we'll settle this through an independent arbiter, that being the court system. They've rejected that suggestion from me. So I would say conservatively, $200,000 to $300,000 more, and that's a guesstimate based upon how much it's taken us to get this far. Now, I understand we have four cases pending, and that's one of the reasons why we spent this kind of money. But if we get the right to sue, it's all whittled down to one case. And that case would involve the back amounts owed, as well as prospectively the amount to be paid in the future. So that's why it's probably a little less than 400, but that's my best guess on what it would cost.
Thank you.
Okay. Further questions?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman.
Yano, Commissioner Yano here. Just have a brief comment. Seems to me that EPA should make a point of being on the side of MDC because of the pollution to the river and the corrosion of the pipes. So I think what I heard is that that EPA is more leaning in the MDC direction. Is that right, Scott?
Myself, I don't want to give any expectations, but what I can tell you is that this is the first time I've had numerous meetings with EPA on this topic, and this is the first time that EPA ever offered us a discussion point on looking, you know, giving us guidance to look to a certain regulation that they felt would apply, and that's never happened before. You know, as you can imagine, DEEP and EPA have a very, very close relationship, working relationship, because DEEP is the delegated state. They've been authorized by EPA. So this is very important. We've got a very good starting point here to prove our position based on water sampling. To your point, Commissioner, the results will be the results. You can't lie it. You can't cheat it. If they are violating the regulations we're referring to, we will bring that directly to EPA.
Good, good. I think that's – I commend you on finding that point to work with. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Scott.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, this – Commissioner Fleming.
Yeah, could I – hold on 1 second.
Sure.
As these negotiations went on for the last year, obviously I wasn't part of them, nor were any members of the board. It was between our attorneys and our chief executive officer. During that period of time, according to the DEEP and the attorneys from the Attorney General's office, they ran this issue up to the poll in the PDM. The budget considerations, and in context of what they were dealing with, the budget considerations were about $7 billion of debt going forward for the state of Connecticut. We're in the middle of a pandemic, and ultimately, the last 4 months, the last 3 months, the state of Connecticut's position has dramatically changed. We've had 28,000 people move into the state of Connecticut. We've seen the deficit go to a surplus, and they just passed a $1.9 trillion federal relief act, which has significant amounts of money in it for state and cities and federal, state and local governments. I truly believe that we've got to come up with a legislative and a gubernatorial direct strategy, and that would be that we meet with the governor's office, because it seems to me that this is a budgetary issue, that DEEP continues to say they don't have the funding to meet the obligation. Obviously, the obligation has consumed $15.5 million of subsidy by the towns and by the MDC, but by the towns, because the towns are the subsidy here. In the event that we can't resolve this, it assumes a $2.1 million cost to our district towns. And I think that we've got to appeal directly to the governor's office and also to the legislative leadership. We are in the long session of the legislature. And by virtue of that, they will be adopting a biennial budget for the next 2 years. And I think we go directly to with our delegation, our towns, and we discuss the issue with the governor, with the legislature, because the legislature has the power to amend the budget. They're creating a budget. Obviously, it would require leadership in the legislature to assist us, because the date for raising a bill has passed. However, the Appropriations Committee has the latitude to add or subtract money to that budget. So I think realistically we've got to talk about in the short term, and I mean real short term, the next month and a half, to impact hopefully a strategy where the governor and the legislative leadership would be receptive to some type of a budgetary addition to what the governor's dealing with now with the budget, because obviously the governor proposes and the legislature disposes. And I think we've got to start to think about that. We have been thinking about it, but I think that's, in my opinion, the course that we've got to pursue, at least in the next month and a half, 2 months before the, I believe the reporting date for the Appropriations Committee is April 27th or 29th. Is that it, Brendan?
April 23rd, Bill.
April 23rd. So it does give us some time to develop that strategy and execute it. So, I mean, that's, in my opinion, what happens. Otherwise, we end up into another year, and in another year, there'll be $2.1 million of revenue that we don't get, or $1 million, whatever we come up with in a negotiation, which wasn't a negotiation. It was an ultimatum based on a series of meetings we weren't participants in. So that's my opinion. Further questions? From the towns, gentlemen, I'd like to hear from the towns first. Anybody from the towns?
Yes, my name is Gail Badrako, and I'm from Newington. And I guess, first of all, I kind of find this ironic that the state is now trying to do an emissions act where they're going to be taxing, their clean air and increasing our fuel taxes for actually a regional consortium where nobody really wants to participate except the state of Connecticut and New Jersey. But anyways, I'm just curious in terms of when you're doing your legal research, is DEEP as forgiving of private, organizations, companies, corporations that pollute the environment? Are they as forgiving and understanding of collecting fees or not slapping on fines as they expect MDC to be?
Chris, do you want to answer that question? Chris Stone?
I put myself on mute. That's an interesting point. Did everyone hear me okay? I gotta make sure I'm on.
Yeah, we can hear you.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I will tell you how the state decides where their priorities are. As I'm a former legislator from way back, and is beyond me. This should be a priority for a lot of reasons, and certainly the environmental issues that are presented, not just by what's just been uncovered, but historically by what's coming out of that landfill. And as much as we catch in our pipes, that doesn't mean we're catching everything that leaches out of the landfill into the Connecticut River. So, and they've designed the landfill and encapsulation of the landfill in such a way that there's still groundwater leachate leaking into the Connecticut River, regardless of how many thousands of gallons we're collecting every day in our pipes and treating down in our sewer system. And that brings me to, and I appreciate your comment, Councillor. The other issue is, the state has recognized back in 2013-14 that this is a regional problem. When they swept $35 million or accepted $35 million from CRRA, they recognized the fact that CRRA was a conglomeration of upwards of 70 towns, that all those 70-plus towns contributed to the landfill creation, maintenance, operation, and most importantly, the use of that landfill. And so when they decided that they were going to take over the management of the landfill, they took from CRA $35 million to fund the post-closure operation, maintenance, and obligations of the landfill. In the same budget year, when the state was having difficulty balancing their budget, they took that $35 million out of that designated fund for landfill maintenance and put it in the general budget. And all we're asking now, in effect, is let's go back to where we were, what you recognized in 2013 and 14, put money back in the budget for this specific issue, just as you had it, and recognize once again that this isn't a problem for eight communities in the greater Hartford region. This is a problem for the state of Connecticut that everyone should be contributing to, just as they did back in 2013 and 14. So, it's that important of an issue, and the governor's office and DEEP, we've told them, we need you to tell them they have to recognize that this is an issue for 8 member towns, because whatever we don't receive in revenue for the landfill costs and landfill fees is passed down to the towns through the ad valorem. This isn't a combination of a sewer and water where you're only on the hook for half of the cost or half of the loss, I should say. You're on the hook for the 100%. And I think if the voices from our 8 member towns, not just as elected officials, but as representing a population of 400,000 people, your voice is critical to getting any kind of resolution at the state level. You've seen it in the paper. You know, NDC is the low-hanging fruit for any politician who wants to criticize the way things are done. They don't acknowledge the fact that our water rate only increased by less than 1% last year, or this year, excuse me. They don't recognize that we maintained a 0% increase on the overall ad valorem charge. They want to talk about municipal ethics, which we have a ethics code, just as you do. They want to talk about having a state audit by the state auditors when we already have audits being done by independent auditors now that are relied upon, and I would submit at least as thorough as a state auditor audit would be, but are relied upon by our bonded community. And they want to create a task force to try to undo what has worked for the past 90 plus years. So if they would concentrate on this issue, we'd go a long way to having or continuing what I consider to be a good relationship with our member towns and being able to give them some relief going forward. It's not just the back, it's going forward on this particular issue. So I appreciate the comment, and I didn't mean to talk too much, but when you talk about the state's priorities, it really troubles me, to say the least.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner DiBella, this is Lisa Murata, Mayor of Rocky Hill. It sounds like you may be preliminarily exploring, or perhaps even more than that, some conversations with the Appropriations Committee. And I'm just wondering, based on that, Commissioner, how receptive do you think lawmakers might be, and do you anticipate pushback should that funding become available, that you may lose some of your standing with respect to not wanting to be regulated?
I don't think those are issues that are negotiable. You're talking about the present legislation that's pending?
I'm talking in terms of wondering if the town should get together and speak to lawmakers with you, and you had specifically mentioned the Appropriations Committee. I'm just wondering, where are you with respect to that that thought process and that dialogue?
Well, that's an issue that we're going to discuss today. We have not done it formally. As you're probably well aware, the legislature is very difficult to lobby at this point in time because everything's done through Zoom or through WebEx to be able to physically go up and meet with legislators, and that's been the process that we've dealt with in its very effective way. My recommendation would be to make an appointment with leadership and go directly to leadership. We have the Speaker of the House, and we have the majority leader of the House of Representatives in our district. Two significant players in the General Assembly. And obviously, without help from leadership, it's going to be very difficult to have the Appropriations Committee make an amendment to that budget. But again, I think a direct approach to the governor also would be a critical factor in lobbying this legislature and trying to get a budget accommodation for the $2.1 million, because in the negotiations, I don't believe, in at least the negotiations I was in, and Chris and Scott, that there was really an argument that the state didn't have a responsibility. The argument was they couldn't afford it. That's not really that the state that they won. The landfill is owned by them. They took it over. They took $35 million out of a fund that was necessary for the what's happening with their discharges into our sewer. So there's no money there. So we've got to go back to the administration. And I can understand the administration's reluctance to talk about a $2.1 million funding of the an obligation they have when they were had a $7 billion shortfall. That's behind them. And I think it's a different strategy at all. And go directly. Let's go directly to the legislative leadership and to the governor's office and explain to them this isn't just MDC that's not getting the money. It's 8-member towns. And I think Chris is right. Some 400,000 people in the greater Hartford area. The really only regional operating agency in the state of Connecticut is MDC that actually raises money, provides services, and does that. So my strategy, given the fact that we've got about 6 weeks that we can actually affect that budget process, to start now. And with the support of the towns, as Chris pointed out, and Scott, we would be a very significant factor in that lobbying process. Remember, you know, this is a significant part of the state of Connecticut, the 400,000 people we're talking about. And they should not be put in a position to subsidize the state of Connecticut.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Scott Jellison, just to add to the mayor's question about the regulations and being regulated by PURA, we've talked about this throughout our budget processes, and it's really important for our towns to understand that besides what Chris Stone has mentioned, you know, our water rate lowest in the state, our ad valorem cost to the towns was zero this year. A really important point is we've been beat up every year over our water increases, our budget increases. And we've got to remember that we have a sister agency in New Haven identical to the MDC, and we are cheaper than them. But yet they charge, their budget is about the same as ours. They're just a water company, not a water sewer company. And they charge the towns, not the water ratepayer, they charge the towns 10% of their $100 million budget. So they're generating $10 million a year for fire protection because they charge per lineal foot of pipe. And as you know, I don't know exactly what bill it is, Brendan, but there's a bill to in right now being discussed to really try and fine-tune and regulate that issue. We don't do that. The MDC is only charging the towns about $1.5 million a year for hydrants. So if we were to be regulated, we could easily say to the same thing. Why don't we just do what Regional does and Connecticut Water does and what Aquarion does? Let's charge 10% of our fire protection to the towns, and we can reduce our water rate by 50 cents. So, you know, it's really you know, it's really unfair of the abuse that the MDC gets, and especially when you look at towns like South Windsor and like Farmington, when there's two different water companies in those towns, one private, one nonprofit. Our water rate is half the price of those utilities, or significantly lower, and yet we continue to get beat up over rate. So my point is, if we were to be regulated, my recommendation to the board would be fine. Let's do what everyone else does. Let's lower our water rate by 50 cents. But that means instead of charging the towns $1.5 million, we'll charge them per lineal foot of pipe in their town, and that would be about $10 million. And that's not what we want to do. But this is how, you know, difficult this conversation is, trying to explain what a good product the MDC is providing and good service we're providing at a significantly lower cost than anybody in the state of Connecticut.
Well, okay. Mr. Chairman, further question.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, it's Commissioner Salemi.
Yeah, go ahead, Commissioner.
Thank you.
Commissioner LeBeau, you're next.
You know, since Scott mentioned earlier a meeting that took place, I think, in 2018, the Commissioner Klee's office, and that was the first meeting that we had to discuss this. By the way, they had 17 people at that meeting. We had 6, I think. But ever since then, the discussion has been about whether or not they would pay, and if they would pay, how much they would pay. But the real issue here is there's an environmental issue, a real threat, a real hazard for not only the MDC towns, but the entire region through the Connecticut River. And Commissioner Iono, you mentioned, you know, our relationship with EPA and the interrelationship with DEEP. So they've already told us that they're not going to get involved if it's just an argument about the money and how much, you know, they could pay or when they should start paying from or whatever. The real issue that they could get involved in is the responsibility for this issue. When CRA was given the job of closing the landfill, they identified this issue. It's in, I have their presentation right in front of me from 2006 when they first proposed to do this, and they mentioned the leachate and the discharge of the leachate. And as that closure progressed, that issue disappeared. And for some reason, it just kind of disappeared. So when the actual transfer of ownership of the landfill went from the city of Hartford to the state of Connecticut, with CRA as a contract partner or whatever, they delivered with that property transfer, Chris, Chris Stone mentioned before, $35 million. And that $35 million was pointed at the long-term operation of the landfill post-closure. That $35 million could easily pay what they owe us and pay for what's really needed here, which is an on-site treatment facility at the landfill. And believe me, I'm in this business. This is not an expensive item, not for the 100,000 gallons a day. Excuse me. And that discharge, once treated, could go in our pipes and not damage our pipe at all. It would just be groundwater. Or it could go directly into the Connecticut River and save DEP the charges for discharging groundwater into our system. But no one, none of these partners seems to be focused on that issue. They actually put a treatment facility there, a test treatment facility there, and proved that they could remove these chemicals that are present in the discharge along with PFAS, which they found just recently. Scott, I don't know, it was 2018 they found the PFAS or something, something like that. So we know that they can treat it, and they know that they can treat it. And EPA needs to know that it's possible, and which I'm sure they do. So I think the real issue is the $35 million disappeared. But secondly, there are literally dozens of landfills just like this one across the state of Connecticut. And once there's a commitment to either treat this discharge or to have a, you know, a long-term operational strategy for landfills, I think that that's the reason that there's reluctance to do anything with it. Now, just within the district itself, I'm from East Hartford. East Hartford has a closed landfill. Rocky Hill has an old closed landfill. Windsor has a closed landfill. I'm not aware of all the rest of them, but I certainly know that, you know, Manchester, which is right near where I live, has a landfill that's being closed now, I guess. And it's bigger than the one in Hartford. So, I mean, this is an issue that it's going to need a long-term solution. And treatment of this stuff is apparently the only thing that can really close out the environmental issue. But I just don't, I don't have any faith that we're going to see an end to this, to the financial issue of this until there's a long-term plan in place as well. So, Scott, maybe you could just explain that they already did a filter facility there. I think it was last year, or it was the year before, Scott.
It was more than that, 2 or 3 years.
They actually, I had mentioned that in my remarks, that they had done a test facility at our, you know, at our prodding in October of 18. During that test, we didn't see the results of that test until really August, and it was because they made the statement in the press of the Hartford Current about the discharge of PFAS from the Hartford Current. So we immediately, you know, requested results from PFAS. So they knew in October there was PFAS. We didn't find out about the PFAS until August of 19.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Use a filter system that did, was able to clean that up. That was my point.
Okay. Commissioner Patel did have his hand up. Then I'll go to Gary, okay?
Through you, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Mr. Commissioner.
We are talking today about strategy and bringing towns together with it and where to start. All along, we were negotiating with staff. You and I, everybody knows, the staff doesn't have any flexibility to give money away if it is not in their budget. So then you have to start where, who makes the budget and where it starts. Just now you stated that we have to start with governor and legislature. Give them the budget and then start. That's simultaneously, not only politically, but as well as PR perspective. And that's what we need to start talking about strategy, how we deal with it.
Commissioner LeBeau.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I entirely agree with Commissioner Papel. I hope Mayor Murata is still on. I just wanted to answer her question directly, if she's still on. And I'll answer it anyway.
I'm here. I'm here.
Thank you very much. You essentially were asking about linkage between passing a budget item and whether that could be used against us or whether it could be used as more of a wedge for the legislature to become more involved in a sense like either overviewing or potentially trying to run the MDC. And I think the answer is unfortunately yes. Although I think it's unlikely given the weight that we have at the legislature, and I speak as a former senator of 22 years, I can't imagine in the Senate caucus that certain senators wouldn't try to, if we were, say, being appropriated $2.5 million a year, that certain senators wouldn't try to use that as a way of leveraging their position for whatever they would like to do versus the MDC. However, given our position with the Speaker and the Majority Leader of the House and other powerful senators that we have in the Senate, I think this can happen without any immediate negative consequences. Thank you very much.
Further questions?
Chairman, Commissioner Hoffman.
I'm sorry.
Hello?
Commissioner
Hoffman?
Commissioner, go ahead. Then Commissioner Taylor. Alan?
Two questions. And first one would be for Scott, who I believe earlier in the call had referenced some issue that suggested the leachate may in fact be connected to the dike system. And so my question is there further danger to the dike system regarding this issue, not just the PFAS, but with this DEEP situation? Second question, and I believe it would be for Chris Stone, and that is what activity is going on, if anything, with our D.C. lobbyist, Schuster, I think it's and our delegation, congressional delegation, regarding the problem of TA and DEEP. It seems to me there should be some discussion ongoing to get somebody off the mark. So I'll leave those questions stated. And
Commissioner, this is Scott Jellison. Yes, Scott Jellison to answer this question. I hope Chris wrote down the second question. But the first question, and not to get too technical, but the dike system, which abuts the landfill, and as you know, the dike system is about 40 feet high, and the landfill is probably 120 feet high. But the dike system was built, and there's what they call a footing drain on the land side, so not the riverside, on the land side. So the dike system is earth, and there is sheeting that goes below the ground, the ground elevation, but it's not through the dike. So at ground level, there is 75 feet of metal sheeting in the ground. But the dike itself, the 40-foot dike, is an earth dike. So on the land side, it accepts groundwater that's leaching from the river and obviously leaching water into a dike system can damage and erode a earth dike system. So you want to collect that water through footing drains and drain that water, and it does. It drains from the drain system on the land side, and it goes into the North Meadows Pond, where once that North Meadows Pond that you see, and Bhupen Patel, Commissioner, knows this very well, once it goes into that that pond, once the elevation gets to a certain elevation, it gets pumped into the river. So therefore, my point to DEEP and to the AG's office was, if water can flow from the river through the dike, then water can flow from the dike into the river. And it's only practical and logical. You don't have to be an engineer to understand that, right? And so what they're doing is they're really not doing anything except mitigating the impacts of the contaminated groundwater. I would defer contaminated groundwater in the landfill as a bathtub of salt water. You can pump out half of the you can put in salt into a bathtub, and it's going to disperse evenly amongst all of that water. And you can pump out half of the water in the tub, but the rest of it is still has salt in it. It's the same purpose as the landfill. The groundwater under the landfill has been and is contaminated by the leachate. The only thing DEEP is doing with their pumping system is when it gets to a certain elevation, they're pumping that water into the MDC sewer system. But the water that's contaminated below that elevation is mixing and leaching into the Connecticut River, period. And that's a fact. So that's our point, is that whether they pump water into our system or not, they're still contaminating the Connecticut water. Why is that important? Because if there were ever to be a spill because of our pipe that is eroding to the point where it cannot serve the landfill, we want to be on record that it wasn't us that contaminated the Connecticut River. This landfill has been contaminating the Connecticut River since the 60s.
Right. So to interrupt you, sorry, just in the time, the question then, the short question is, if the pipe is being corroded, then it's possible that the dike system is also being corroded. Again, you can have short answers, fine.
Yes or no?
I would say I don't know.
Further questions?
There's a second part, if I may, Mr. Chairman. There's a second part to Commissioner Hoffman's question.
Please.
If I may, Mr. Chairman. Chris Stone, District Counsel. We have communicated to our Washington lobbyists as to what's going on with our relationship with the interplay between DEEP's role and EPA's role in this. as Scott pointed out, this is at the staff level at this point, so there's not absent or until we get the results of tests that are going to be done to analyze the materials that's being released, there's not much that anyone can do at that level, but certainly they're aware of it and they're keeping we're keeping an eye on it, and we'll be communicating with them the results of the test.
Okay. Further questions of Commissioner Taylor, 1 second, I'll be to you. You're next. Anybody who is not a member of the board, any of our visitors from the towns, any further questions? Go ahead, Al.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, through you, one of my concerns here in all of this is that I'm fearful that we're sort of losing in terms of the totality of the situation. An issue when I came on the board in 2003, for those of you who may or may not remember, we had something called CRRA, which we were managing, and of which I think what we had got something in the neighborhood of what $2 million a year in revenues out of.
That was, yeah,
management. It was decided that basically we were not the party to be involved in this and that someone could do it better. We were pushed out. The fact of the matter is that we then had to make up through the ad valorem substantially a large portion of the revenues that we lost when we were pushed out of CRRA. And I'm just, you know, this whole landfill thing sort of reminds me in a sense of this thing that we have to be vigilant about, is that if we don't protect our revenue streams, we are always in a situation that we have to make it up. And if we have to make it up, invariably, we wind up either hitting the towns or doing things that I think just puts us in a very precarious position. So I think we need to be thoughtful and try to focus on a kind of long-term strategy, because at the end of the day, if we don't protect our income stream, then we've got a real problem, not only for ourselves, but for our member towns. And I think, as Buddy has intimated, we're talking about 8 towns when there are another 70 towns basically in this region.
Because
that in one way or another, they're involved in this thing too, but they escaped the costs. So that's just a concern that I have.
Further questions? Again, getting back to my strategy, I assume the towns here would be supportive of a approach to the leadership and the legislature and the governor's office. Is there an objection to that support? Or is there no interest in it?
Mr. DeBello, this is Peter Souza from Windsor.
Peter.
I agree with approaching the legislative leadership with a financial request, and I like the commissioner's thoughts regarding also having them explore the potential for a on-site treatment plant, which in the long run will potentially look at saving or diminishing the harm on the environment and not creating cost long-term operating costs at the MDC plant. So
I think that would be realistic in the initial asking for an allocation in the budget, and then a subsequent long-term strategy to either build that or use some other method. Now, the state could put it in container trucks and move it off the site instead of putting it in our sewer. So there's a lot of other options here. Not a lot. There's other options. And but I think the first step has got to be, Peter, is to go to the legislature and the leadership and the governor's office and ask for relief in this year's budget, and then get us into a strategy of you have an obligation here. You own the landfill. And it's controlled by DEEP, who is the regulator, and they're the violator. I mean, this is an equity question relative to the people that live in these towns. We didn't cause it. It was caused by 70 towns. So.
Chairman, I agree completely, and so I just wanted to voice my support for that strategy.
Thank you, Peter. Further comments, questions?
And this is Matt Hart from the town of West Hartford.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Matt, and then Phil. Phil, you're next. Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you all for the informative presentation today. I concur with my colleague, Mr. Souza. I do think reaching out to the governor, as well as our legislative leadership and key representatives from our member towns, to develop, to work with them to develop a solution here. So I concur with that approach and happy to participate in that.
Thank you. Phil?
Yeah, I would concur with both Matt Hart and Peter Souza's approach, as well as the approach of leadership here to go ahead and approach the governor's office, the legislature, and whatnot. Let's see if we can't get some resolution to this.
Thank you, Phil. Yes, sir. Go ahead. Weathersfield?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No surprise, I'm going to echo the sentiments of Windsor, West Hartford, and Mr. Shank, formerly of Bloomfield. While I can't commit certain things on behalf of the town of Weathersfield without council approval, I support the dialogue that needs to take place and the push that needs to happen.
Thank you. Further comment? No further comment, no further questions. I think we will pursue that avenue.
Excuse me? Yeah, I'm sorry, I was on mute. I was trying to speak. My name is Gail Bedrako. I'm from Newington. I certainly can't speak for the rest of the council, whatever, but I just want to comment that I really do believe that it's got to be taken to a higher level, but not just for the financial consequences for the eight member towns, but it needs to get broader a broader audience in terms of, I mean, everybody's so environmentally conscious now, the fact that this has consequences for the entire state. You're talking about the river. You're talking about if you ever want to do any development along the river in the Hartford region, that's going to be contaminated landfill. I mean, you're not going to be able to develop it. So in terms of, approaching the state, there's a financial impact, but it's also got to be made, every legislator has to be made aware of the regional as well as statewide consequences of letting this go on, letting this go on. Thank you.
I agree. There has to be a broader lobbying process. There's no doubt about it. The unfortunate thing is we only have 6 weeks or five and a half, 6 weeks. But that's got to be part of an ongoing process. I agree with you, Gail. Further discussion, comments? Okay. If not, we will be in contact with the other member towns also. There's two or three towns that aren't here. We will contact them directly and bring them up to date on the meeting we had today. And hopefully we as a board can move together and start talking about a strategy to approach the leadership in the governor's office.
Mr. Chairman, Scott Jellison. Mr. Chairman, Scott Jellison, I just want to add that once we do get results from our testing over the next 2 weeks regarding these minimum federal regulations, and we have discussions with EPA Boston on this issue, we'll definitely update the board and the towns as to the results of those conversations.
Thank you. Thank you for your participation today, your time. Again, very valuable, and I think thank everybody for their participation. Let's see. I guess I still have to stick with. Are there any further questions from the public?
Yes. This is Judy Allen, and it's just a informational question. You spoke about, you know, if you could charge the towns 10% for fire protection, how much money that would be. I'm just wondering if doing something like that would require a charter change.
The board decides what the rate structure is for all of our rate structures. So we have chosen, we brought this issue up at our board meetings numerous times, trying to compare ourselves to the other water companies. And unfortunately, I feel like this issue kind of falls by the wayside. But if the board so chose to charge, we would have to charge everybody the same. We have to charge member towns. Right, uniform rate, but the board could choose to charge for fire protection per lineal foot of pipe. It's to the point of regulation. Pure allows it. They allow it for Connecticut Water. They allow it for Aquarion. And Regional Water Authority, which is a sister agency to us, does exactly the same thing. So, Chris Stone, if you want to.
Chris, do you want to get in?
Sure. Sure, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Chris Stone. We haven't done any written analysis of this, Judy, but the short answer is no. In my opinion, we would not need to go to the legislature. We, as Scott pointed out, we have the authority within our charter now to set our rates on the water side.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Judy. Further questions? Okay. If not, the appropriate motion is in order to adjourn.
Adjourned, Commissioner Adel.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Second.
Without objection, we stand adjourned. Thank you very much for your participation today.